This audio is brought to you by MuslimCentral.com.
Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. A'udhu billahi minash shaitanir rajim. Falamma ra'a qamisahu qudda min duburin qala innahu min kaydikun inna kaydakun 'azim. يوسف أعرض عن هذا واستغفري لذنبك إنك كنت من الخاطئين رب اشرح لي صدري ويسر لي أمري واحلل عقدة من لساني يفقه قولي فالحمد لله والصلاة والسلام على رسول الله وعلى آله وصحبه أجمعين أما بعد My hope today is to cover a few things and make some introductory comments or not introductory but disclaimer comments really before I start my lecture but while I'm doing that I'm going to ask my Valerie to also look at comments right now and just kind of make sure that sounds okay before I start talking and then it gets distracting. I also want to apologize about the sound quality yesterday. The team's working on putting a replica of yesterday's lecture in better sound quality, inshallah, so you guys will have that soon. But while that's being checked, I want to make some disclaimer comments. First thing I wanted to let my audience know is just some things about the study process in general, but more specifically, when it comes to Surah Yusuf. Generally speaking, my process for studying the Qur'an hit a restart a few years ago. So I decided to go back to Surahs of the Qur'an and make no assumptions. So even though I've been trying to study the Qur'an for about 20 years now, I decided that I'm going to start over again. And I'm going to start with even though I've learned something before, I'm going to assume that I haven't and ask questions as if I'm learning it for the first time. So I approach the study of a surah to the best of my ability with a clean slate, and try to ask questions about it that occur to me. I'm not interested in coming up with answers that nobody has ever come up with before or something like that. In fact, most of the time, the questions I do come up with, the answers are found in our wonderful tradition, and the language of the Quran is very, very clear. But then there are sometimes I have thoughts about an ayah or a way of looking at the ayah that I'm not sure I found anywhere in tafsir studies. And that's when I have a discussion with my dear colleague, Sheikh Suhaib Saeed, who's actually head of research for Bayina Institute and for Foundation. And he's, if you guys don't know about his credentials, I'm an independent researcher, if you will, of the study of the Qur'an. But he's, alhamdulillah, he graduated out of Azhar in the study of the Qur'an and then went on to finish his PhD in Tafsir al-Qur'an bil-Qur'an at the University of London. And is extremely well-versed both in Western academic literature on the subject of the study of the Qur'an and also our tradition. So we kind of do an analytical approach. We go through, summarize some of the tafsirs, and our go-to tafsir for this particular series has been primarily Alusi, rahimahullah, Fakhruddin al-Razi. He's actually even translated and summarized the notes from Imam Razi. He'll be publishing them, inshallah ta'ala. And if push comes to shove, Ibn Ashur and other sources, when it comes to the words of the Qur'an, we look at different lexicons. We start with, Muhammad Hassan Jabal's dictionary, Al-Mu'jam Al-Ishtiqaqi, Al-Mu'assal Li-Kalimat Al-Qur'an, among other sources. Sometimes we'll look at Lane to see if he's translated some of the obscure phrases in a certain way that helps us understand. But the point is, the first layer of trying to grasp at the meanings of an ayah is me engaging in an in-depth conversation with him. And that's a daily process for me and him. And that's part of what we do. He'll go over what tradition has to say, what the aqwal are, and we'll have a very open, back and forth about what this could mean, what is more plausible, what is less plausible, what are more acceptable interpretations, what are less acceptable interpretations. And then I'll also present novel ideas. I'll present, well, how about looking at it this way? Or why not approach it this way? And he, in a sense, he's also become kind of my validation too, because sometimes I'll present an idea that I haven't read anywhere else, and he'll say, yep, that makes sense, or that is a plausible way of looking at it. I can see how that's within the text. So that's the first layer of study. That's from the language, tafsir, and the theological side of it, the historical side of it, etc. You guys are also familiar with the biblical comparative study. That's another dimension. But because we're dealing with a surah where there's a very deep social and psychological dimension too, and it is a pretty highly contentious subject. It's a scandal. And in this scandal, a woman is being incriminated and a man is innocent. And somebody listening to that will say, well, obviously Noman's a man, so he's going to take the man's side. well, it so happens that Yusuf alayhi salam was innocent. That's not my fault. That was already, Allah already decided that one. And that the person acting inappropriately in this case happens to be a woman. But that doesn't mean I'm on some kind of crusader agenda against women. It also doesn't mean that if the Qur'an says something that I have to think 10 times before, will I offend a female if I say this, and therefore I should change what I think in all genuineness, what I think the Qur'an says, in order to not offend somebody. Yeah, you know, and speaking of which, you know, last week's khutbah, I mentioned, you know, obsessive compulsive disorder, like some people that go on the other extreme and become obsessive about something. And Allah says, لَا تَغْلُوا فِي دِينِكُمْ. And somebody pointed out that could be rather insensitive, because people that actually suffer from the diagnosis of obsessive compulsive disorder may think that they're sinful for being that way, and that's an insensitive way of looking at it. And they're right. I shouldn't have said that. I should have said, you don't have to go overboard in something. But saying OCD, which is actually a psychological label, that's a mistake on my part. So my process also is, if I do feel like I made a mistake and it's been pointed out, I can address it and say, hey guys, I shouldn't have said it this way. This is how I should have said it. And that's my process as a researcher. Particularly when it comes to this though, because it is a sensitive issue and it's a matter of dignity for both men and for women. So what I decided to do is add a new dimension to my process for the study of the surah. And that's actually to discuss the point of view of, you know, the wife of the minister. What's going on in her head, you think? You know, if you analyze the words she uses or the scenario she finds herself in, how can we justify her behavior? Not justify, but rationalize her behavior. Or what kind of profile does it, you know, depict? And that conversation is something I had with my wife exhaustively. And her opinion matters to me, not just because she's a female, but because if there was anyone that would never let me get away with an opinion that disregards the female perspective, that would be her. And alhamdulillah, she came to Islam, you know, a little less than a decade ago. So she has experience and trials and experiences in her life that are very diverse in nature, but she's seen the world. And she's been around the block, if you will, you know. So she understands some things about how people act and behave. And so I gain a lot of insight even from discussing with her. At the end of it all, we are all going to have biases. I will never be able to claim that I come to the study of the Quran without any biases, because human beings are a product of their experiences, their religion, they're a product of their upbringing, they're a product of their childhood experiences, they're a product of their education, which teachers influence them. Those are all a bunch of biases together. But to the very best of our ability, we try to be as honest as we can to the best of our understanding of the text. So while I explain to you what I believe the ayat to mean and what I find the most compelling, there will be two dimensions. One is, what is the ayah actually saying word for word, right? And we try to explore that. And the other is actually, ironically, ta'wilul hadith. It's what's behind the text. What is it that's building up to this scene? What is going on, like we did with the brothers of Yusuf alayhi salam. So today is going to be an ayah where we're going to find some interesting things. And I wanted to say these introductory comments before I get into the ayat, and some people may feel that these may even be relevant for the discussions I've had before. I think this is relevant especially because I don't want to be guilty of saying something about the Quran, first of all, from a biased point of view, deliberately, and second of all, to abstain from saying something about Allah's word that I understand to be the case, because I'm afraid somebody might be upset. Because if I do that, then I don't have fear of Allah, I have fear of people. Right? So if something's become clear to you, you have to say it. And I and any sincere student of the Quran, as all of us should be open to criticism and reevaluation based on evidence. Based on, okay, well, what's your reasoning? And that's actually something I'm very grateful that I have a friend like Sheikh Suhaib Saeed and a partner in this work that I can go back and forth on and, you know, really test the veracity of ideas. And sometimes I throw ideas out and he swats them away. And sometimes he presents something and I swat it away. Or we go back and forth at it and there's no offense taken, because we're just trying to get at what Allah Azza wa Jalla is saying. And that's a healthy process as far as I'm concerned. My hope for the foundation, Bayina Foundation, in the future is actually more collaborative exercises like the one I have with him personally, to actually have panels of people here sitting discussing deeper issues in Quran studies that affect society, that affect, you know, our view of Islam altogether. There are places people consider controversial in the Quran and things like that. Those are the kinds of conversations I want to have with a panel of people, And here are a number of perspectives: non-Muslim, Muslim perspective, someone who, you know, a female perspective, an activist perspective, a sociologist perspective, a psychologist perspective, a traditional scholarship perspective, a hadith perspective, a legal perspective, a theological perspective, and actually bring those kinds of conversations to the larger public. So that, you know, I mean, there's benefit in khutbahs and talks and reminders and things like that. But at the same time, we should be making an effort to elevate the intellectual, like, sort of baseline of the Muslims, and especially encouraging dialogue about the Quran, engagement with the Quran. If you don't understand something, or if you interpreted something a certain way, then maybe having that kind of dialogue gives you an opportunity to get your idea tested and corrected and fixed. And that's, and so long as we're doing this with humility, when somebody comes along and says, "I know what the ayah means," and everybody else who thinks otherwise is wrong, that's where the problem lies. We will make our human effort to understand the ayah to the best of our ability. And some things in the ayah are explicitly clear. She tore his shirt. No other way to look at it. You want to interpret that as she hurt his feelings? She tore his shirt. Okay. She desired him. That's what it says. She desired him. You want to interpret that as she wanted to have a, you know, coffee with him and wanted to talk about her feelings? No, she desired him. Nobody wants to talk to you about their feelings and rip your shirt. That's not how that works. So the text says what it says. There's no way to escape that. But can there be other points of discussion that, where scholars are trying to fill in the gaps historically? They are. They are trying to fill in the gaps. And where we're trying to fill in the gaps too, sure. And in those things, there is debate possible. So the same thing is going to happen here, because what we're going to have today, inshallah, in the study of ayah number 28 and 29, is they're at the door, and that's where the last scene was. They're at the door, and the husband is there, and Sayyida Halad al-Bab, and she's made her crying case, and he's put his side in, yeah? And then the family member of hers has given his point of view. Look, let's take a step back here and look at the shirt, right? And he's spelled that out slowly, and I told you, spelling that out slowly can also be a way of Allah Azza wa Jal calming, showing us that things are being calmed down, and he's deliberating, and he's giving a chance for people to not rush to judgment and just hear me out here. If the shirt is torn from the front, then clearly she's lied or she's told the truth and he can't ever be trusted. But if the shirt is torn from behind everyone, then she's lied and he is trustworthy. He is from the kind of people you can trust. So spelling it out like that can also have like a psychological effect of everybody chilling out. Oh, okay. Right? But now that he said this, I want you to imagine she's huddled behind her husband. She's like playing the victim. The guy has spoken. The servants are all around. There's a commotion. Maybe some people have even grabbed Yusuf alayhi salam. We don't know. And so when this scene happens, the minister, the husband, I want you to understand what he does. What did the ayah describe? He says, فَلَمَّا رَأَى قَمِيسَهُ قُدَّ مِن دُبُرٍ. Then when he saw, finally when he saw, the lamma can have some sense of tarahi, which could be a very subtle way of the Quran indicating that it didn't just happen super fast like the ayat. The ayat are moving really fast. So, هِيَ رَاوَدَتْنِي عَنْ نَفْسِي وَشَهِدَ شَاهِدٌ مِّنْ أَهْلِهَا. And right after this, فَلَمَّا رَأَى قَمِيصَهُ. It's happening super fast, right? But it may be that all that argument and then the settling down, and finally he said, okay, let me look at the shirt. So the ayah begins, and finally when he saw his shirt. The word saw can also be رُؤْيَةُ الْقَلْبِ. When he thought about it, because the seeing in Arabic can also mean to see with your eyes, but also to see with your mind or your heart. Like, you know, you say, I see. Oh, I see what you're saying. But that's not see, that's see and see over here, right? So when he actually thought about the shirt ripped from behind, then he said, now what's he going to say? These are his words, his immediate words. إِنَّهُ مِنْ كَيْدِ كُنَّا إِنَّ كَيْدَ كُنَّا عَظِيمٌ. No doubt about it, it, which we won't translate yet, what that means, it is from the scheming of you women. No doubt about it, the scheming of you women is incredible, is azim, is great, it's grand. Now, these are his immediate words. The way that I would like to present the narrative of this story I just want to let you know that there are different mufassirun who try to fill in the same gap that I'm going to try to fill. And the gap they try to fill is, what kind of person is this man? This guy who just spoke, the husband, what kind of person is he? And they're trying to paint what you can call a psychological profile of this person. So some people painted the picture that this wasn't much of a man. He was probably, you know, asexual, or he didn't have any attraction to his wife, and he wasn't even like bothered by the possessiveness. Any man would go insane if he heard something like that, either in rage towards the man who did it, or if not, if it's proven that the wife did it, that his entire rage and frustration and this hellish experience would be directed towards the woman, right? So that it would be an extreme reaction. This is not a calm situation. But the fact that he has a calm response, and we'll see that this is a calm response, means that he is not, he's just not, maybe this is why some extrapolated from it, that he may not be very intimate with his wife, he may not be fulfilling her needs, etc., etc., or he wasn't very possessive, or he wasn't really much of a man, he was a weakling, etc. So they've painted that kind of picture. Another picture that's been painted is, he was so gracious and so kind that when he brought Yusuf alayhi salam, he said, honor his housing. And now he's dealing with the situation in a graceful kind of way. And he's saying, you know, he's kind of being forgiving on both sides and things like that. So there's this kind of nice guy type picture that's being painted. Again, this interpretation of his profile is not sacred. This is our scholarship trying to fill in the gaps of what kind of person is he, so they can understand where his words are coming from. Like, what's the point? Why is he making these comments? My reading of this is rather different, and I find a lot of validation after having talked to Sheikh Suhaib. I actually was completely convinced of this position already anyway, but I presented that to him, and that's what I'm going to present to you. For the alternative views, for those of you that can read the Arabic language, Imam al-Alusi's tafsir is very, you know, very thorough in the kind of profile that's painted. I believe Imam Razi has quite a few things to say about this too. Now, let me tell you something. The thing seems to be that above all else, this is a calculated politician. This person is a calculated politician. And he thinks of the long term. And the moment he saw Yusuf alayhi salam for purchase, you can already see he's not thinking of the short term, he's thinking of long term, captured inside even the word mathwa. Captured also inside asa ayyanfa'ana wa nattakhidahu walada. Maybe he could benefit us, or we could even take him up as a son. He's not thinking of right now, he's thinking of the future, yeah? So he has, and politicians become politicians because they don't react like everybody else in, you know, in the moment. They think about the next election cycle. They think about the future. They think about like 10 years in advance, 20 years in advance. Maybe somebody's a governor now and they've got the plan to run for the presidency in 10, 15 years. They're not thinking about that right now. And if somebody asks them, they'll have no comment and say, no, of course not. But they've got the wheels turning slowly, yeah? So first thing that becomes very clear is he is a politician. Second thing that becomes clear from his response is he's actually not so bothered by what happened with his wife. He's actually not so bothered. And why not? So let's fill in these blanks now. You see, the question is, he says, it is from the scheming of you women. It is from the scheming of you women. What is it? Some people said, it is the shirt. The shirt is from the scheming of you women. But that doesn't make so much sense, because she didn't scheme to rip the shirt. That's actually the opposite of what happened. Yeah? Then it could be that her crying and her dramatic scenery, that's could be the scheming of you women. Or it could be that the entire evil act, like you trying to cheat on your husband and doing all of that, that's the scheming of you women. My personal reading of this that Sheikh Suhaib and I find the most convincing is that this is actually referring to the dramatic performance she just did to get Yusuf in trouble. And that performance was so convincing that the minister, the Potiphar, almost gave in and said, yeah, we're going to hurt this guy. And then the calming voice came and settled the issue, and he saw the shirt and he just took a step back and he goes, wow, this is, you women are pretty good at, this is the kind of scheming you women do. Now, what is you women referring to? To the best of my knowledge, what I can grasp here is that the phrase you women, he used the plural, right? He didn't say your scheme, he said the scheming of you women. That's also interesting, because there are no other women, it's just her. You know, and some even tried to say maybe there were two, three other women there. I was like, no, the Quran's pretty clear. There was nobody else there. It's just this one lady. First of all, he's being a politician when he says this is the kind of scheming you women do. This is from the scheming of you women, because instead of putting blame specifically on his wife, you are a scheming woman. He basically says you women are all the same. So he's generalizing. You see that? When you generalize, you're softening the blow. Why is he softening the blow? Not for her. Maybe a little bit for Yusuf. We'll see why for Yusuf. But there's a crowd gathered. He's got to do situation control right now. He's got to do like, because if this leaks out, this is really bad for his politics. He understands what's just happened right now and this game that she just played and it backfired. This is a really bad thing. Now think about this. This is crazy. He doesn't seem to go crazy over the fact that she cheated on him. He's more upset about the fact that she dramatized and made him look guilty. The qaid part. That's the qaid. The scheming. So in other words, the thing that can damage him politically is a bigger problem for him. And the fact that his wife was interested in another man is not so much the problem. And then he's saying, qaidi kunna, as if women of a certain political elite or a certain financial elite. You see, in class societies, and the fact of the matter is most of the world, if not all of it, has a kind of class society. There's a certain group of people that are in a certain position politically or economically that have a world of their own. They have a circle of their own. They look at the rest of humanity in a different way. They look at them kind of like Yusuf alayhi salam was being looked at in the slave market. Okay? So those people that have their entourages and they have their, you know, stretch limos and they're in the back and they've got their drivers and this and that and everybody else, you're not going to find them walking around in the mall. You're not going to find them, you know, at line in a restaurant or whatever. They see themselves as above the rest of society. Okay, so they have this, I guess you could call it in some sense, a kind of God complex. Okay, and this upper echelon of society, they have their own parties. They have their own morality. They have their own way of entertaining themselves. They have their own world in which they decide what's okay and what's not okay. And their morality and their right and wrong is not the same as everybody else's. It's not the same. In fact, even when they show religious adherence, they only go to a church and kiss a baby because it's election season. They see themselves as above religion. Religion is for these fools that need hope in their lives because they don't have enough. We're already on top. We don't need religion. But we need to look religious sometimes for them because, you know, then they'll give us their vote because they'll say he's a believer like I am or she's a believer like I am. You understand? So they use religion as a means for their political, you know, promise. They also use morality for the same reason. So whatever happens behind closed doors, the world doesn't have to know. But in front of the press, in front of the public, we have to come across as moral, family values, etc. That's what we have to present. But what happens inside the presidential palace? What happens inside, you know, the White House? What happens inside these closed quarters, the governor's mansion, whatever? People don't have to know. And you know, if any of you are familiar with politics and modern politics and political science, and if you've read memoirs and books of people that were in the Secret Service or security detail or worked for a governor or worked for a president, and they have the tell-all of what used to happen inside, I don't have to spell out that kind of stuff for you. Everybody, any adult knows that they have their own, you know, their own twisted way of getting what they want. And one thing it clearly exhibits is they don't think of people that they serve or they use as human beings. They just look at them as things to use and discard. You know, that's how they see themselves. Now, ancient Egyptian society, clearly a class society, for fun's sake, I'll take Suhaib's analogy, it's a pyramid structure. So they're on top of that pyramid, and then there's people at the way bottom. Now on top, these women, they have their own way of entertaining themselves. And they like to create drama in certain situations. And they've been known to do this kind of thing. Okay? And he's a politician, so he knows that world. He knows the men of that world. He also knows the women of that world. So he's commenting on his wife, you and your friends, you women, not women, but what? You women, you do these kinds of games. You scheme these kinds of things. I almost lost my favorite employee. Like for him, like this is more problematic that this was going to be about Yusuf alayhi salam. But he, another way of reading this also is, this is certainly the kind of scheming you women do. You see the kind of problem you just created? He can't come out and say that. Do you realize you whatever you want, craziness, evil you want to do? Yeah, we all know you do that stuff anyway. This is, you know, and we see later on, kunti innaki kunti min al-khati'in, you are from those that has been making mistakes. Has been. I see. So he's not surprised. That's why you're seeing he's not totally surprised. That's not what's happened here. But he sees this is a PR nightmare. You know what, you want to do, you're crazy? Fine, so long as the press doesn't know. So long as those doors stay closed. You want to do this? What is wrong with you? And of all things, with the only guy that I have that has integrity in the house, you know. So he says, "Hada min kaydi kunna," and your scheming is really good. Because you are so good, I'm a seasoned politician, and you almost sold it to me. My job is to sell it to people, and you almost got me. And so this is the comment that he's making. Now the fun part. The Quran quotes, "This is certainly from the scheming of you women." No doubt the scheming of you women is great. And somebody actually commented, you know, historically, the Quran says that the scheming of the devil, inna kayda shaytani kana da'ifa, that the scheming of the devil is weak. And Allah says the scheming of women is great. So women are worse than the devil. It's in the Quran. Yeah, no. First of all, this isn't Allah speaking. This is who speaking? The minister. Allah is quoting the minister. So, and when Allah said the devil's plots are weak, then who was speaking? Allah was speaking. So there's one difference. Then the counter argument is, well, this is Quran. Allah said this, and he didn't later on refute himself and say, by the way, the minister said this, but it's not true. That's not how it works. So Allah was silent on the issue, therefore there's some truth in it. Well, if that's true, then when you go earlier on in the story, and the brothers of Yusuf alayhi salam, Yusuf alayhi salam's brothers, what did they say about Yaqub alayhi salam? They said, "Inna abana lafi dhalalim mubin." Our dad is clearly in confusion. Our dad is clearly lost in confusion. Allah never corrected it. Allah didn't say, by the way, they said that and that was wrong, because he expects human beings to make sense of this and understand that they're wrong for thinking this way, right? Now Allah is quoting a politician, and a politician will say what suits his politics. He's not making a comment that Allah is, you know, agreeing with, except in one sense. There are certain classes of women that are like this woman, and that's why the pronoun kaydi kunna, not kaydin nisa, kaydi kunna, women like you, your circle, your, and by the way, later on we're going to see her friends, and they are like her. So it even gets proven later on that the kunna is not referring to all women, it's referring to women of this certain class, this certain mentality, where they think they can burn other people's lives for their own pleasure. Where they, instead of them getting caught and admitting that they've done something wrong, they can just come out and, you know, throw somebody else under the bus. So long as their reputation stays intact because they're in the public eye. And for women like that, and even politicians like that, though, almost the God that they worship is not some idol, it's not the Lord of the world, it's actually their reputation. That's their God. No, nothing gets in the way of that. So you can sacrifice people in the name of your in the name of your reputation, no problem. And so when he says this, هَذَا مِنْ كَيْدِ كُنَّا, what was her reasoning? Her reasoning was, if the blame goes on him, I'm still safe. And he gets burned for rejecting me, because I should be able to get away with whatever I want to do. And he got in the way of that, right? So he says, "Inna kayda kunna azim." Some have extrapolated from this that Allah is saying that women have a great power to scheme, and you know their scheming is so mighty, etc., etc. I would only agree in our analysis, in my own analysis, and Sheikh Suhaib's of the Quran, that there are some women that are capable of this, and it is pretty powerful. If a minister in Egypt can get caught up in it. And he sees, this ain't the first time. This is, you know, in Texas they say, this not my first rodeo. That's why he says, this is the kind of scheming you women do. Last month there was a scandal in that house, and there was this, and there was that, and there was the other. He knows these things happen in that circle that don't make it to the public, but the inside group knows, right? So he's making reference to that too. But remarkably, he does deflect blame from her, meaning, yeah, you're all like that, you and your friends, you and all these women in this city, you're all just messed up. But he doesn't actually say how disgusting her act is or how repulsed he is by the infidelity. None of that stuff. Oh, all you women are just crazy. You do such terrible things. That's watering it down, isn't it? Even the word scheming is watering it down. Like, put a man in that position and he finds his woman, he's going to say, oh, you women make such schemes. He's not going to say that. But he's trying to get everybody to not make a big deal out of this. Because right now he is under situation control. Containment is the problem right now. Because he sees this as becoming a liability for his political position. That's what he's looking at. And so he says, إِنَّ كَيْدَكُ النَّعَظِيمُ. Notice, so he turns to her. He says this about women. You women, you're so crazy. You do this scheming. Your scheming is so amazing. You almost got me too. And then he turns to Yusuf alayhi salam. And what are his words to Yusuf alayhi salam? Yusuf, and I'm pretty sure he doesn't call him by name usually. Usually they call him by their servant. You know, Ya Ghulam, Ya Walad, boy, you know, servant, or whatever. Or you don't even have to call him by name. But it's like he's putting his arm on his shoulder. Yusuf, let me talk to you for a second. A'rid an hadha. Could you overlook this? Overlook this. Let's pretend this never happened, young man. Yusuf, just ignore this, okay? What is he telling Yusuf alayhi salam? We're not going to talk about this. And you're not going to talk about this with anybody else. A'rid an hadha is actually the press release will all have black marker. Okay? We're going to censor this event. There are not going to be any interviews. If anybody wants to talk to you about it, there's my instruction to you. A'rid an hadha. It's not just overlook her mistake, forgive her. It's not that. He's still concerned that if this happened, the word will get out and people will want to talk to who? To Yusuf. And Yusuf alayhi salam is not going to, like, he already said it openly, رَاوَدَتْنِي عَنْ نَفْسِي. She's the one that seduced me. He said it, right? So if people come to him and they're trying to incriminate him, he's going to defend himself, and he basically gave him the instruction, you're going to be quiet about this. Ignore it. Ignore it meaning don't make a big deal out of it, forgive her, etc. But it also means, look, I need you to be, you understand that this can't get out, right? You understand, right? And so he's silenced Yusuf alayhi salam. So yes, his innocence has been proven, but his innocence has been proven inside closed quarters. Yeah? So if you can say this was a trial and there was a verdict, it was all a secret trial and a secret verdict. And the truth of it is not known to anybody outside the house. And obviously, if Yusuf is being told, don't talk about it, the servants have been given similar instruction. Nobody talk about this. This is, whatever is being shared here, stays here. Okay? Now what's the problem with that? The problem with that, this kind of cover-up situation is, it's going to leak anyway. It's going to leak anyway. But when it leaks, what was the reason for the cover-up? The reason for the cover-up was to protect the politician's reputation, right? So when this gets out, then there's a second round of damage control. The second round of damage control is, how do I get this rumor to never become fact? I need to annihilate the source that might be the one place where this rumor will turn into fact will be Yusuf, right? So what did they do later on? They're going to throw him in jail. Why are they going to throw him in jail? He didn't do anything wrong. And the minister knows he didn't do anything wrong. So the classical picture that's been painted of the minister as a nice guy who wanted to give him good housing, that's really great housing. You don't think Yusuf alayhi salam told him that he comes from a certain land and his father is Yaqub, and Yaqub taught him about this deen and he'd like to go back to his dad, but he says, no, give him good housing. No, you're here now. Really kind. You know, it's not that kind. He saw his benefit over this child's well-being. That's what he saw. And later on, people are surprised that he did this. Like he had Yusuf alayhi salam thrown in jail, even though that's not our ayah today. But don't be surprised. His end game is to save his political career. And to do that, you need to silence the one source, one leak, that's going to make the scandal a reality. And then people are going to say things, oh, you can't even control your... You can't control your house. You're going to control the finance, governance of finance. You're going to be head of security. You can't even secure your own house. We should trust you and the people that work under you. You can't even trust your right-hand man. People are going to say all kinds of things about him. Or you can't even control your wife. How are you going to control this or that or the other? He's going to tank. This is not just about her now. So he says, Yusuf a'rid an hadha. And you know, notice, first he turned to the wife. As soon as he said, you've created such a problem for me, he sees the biggest threat right now is who? Yusuf. So he stopped talking to the wife, turned to Yusuf, and Yusuf, ignore this. And then he comes back to the wife again. Because the logical thing would be, if you're talking to the wife, finish talking to the wife, then talk to Yusuf, yeah? But first he says, you're scheming. Yusuf, not going to talk about this. And you, مَسْتَغْفِرِي لِذَنْبِكِ, you know, ask forgiveness for the sin you've done. Apologize for the sin you've done. Seek forgiveness. Now some, you know, this became a sort of source of debate. Did they believe in Allah? Did they believe in God? Because istighfar means what? Seeking forgiveness of Allah. But there's no mention of Allah here. Then others said, no, they worshipped idols, but they had Allah, the concept of Allah too. Clearly they've heard the word Allah before, because ma'ad Allah is already there, and that went past her ears. So that's already there. But istighfar can simply just mean just seek forgiveness. Seek forgiveness for the sin you've done. In his mind, now this, also interesting, dhamb means something embarrassing that you do. Dhamb is an embarrassing thing that you do. And these are lighter sins, dhunub. This is again him downplaying what's just happened. And what's happened? No self-respecting husband that actually has a real relationship with his wife would actually turn to the wife and say, just do istighfar, okay? Just go think about what you did. And matter solved. What? This is the end of the marriage. Under normal circumstances, this would be the end of the marriage. But it's not. He's just saying, go apologize. So the question becomes, why is he telling her to seek forgiveness for your sin? He's actually pacifying Yusuf. Meaning, Yusuf, you ignore this. Look, I'm going to give you, I'll show you justice. You, apologize for what you did. Wait for your sin. See, I yelled at her. So I'm being fair. So don't worry about getting justice. I already gave justice to her. So he's kind of mellowing him, because should he want to speak up, that will, you know, quell it. The other is to everybody else, look, this is nothing more than a small mistake, and you should apologize for it. وَاسْتَغْفِرِي لِذَنْبِكِ إِنَّكِ كُنْتِ مِنَ الْخَاطِئِينَ You've been from those that keep on making mistakes. Kana can mean the distant past, so it can mean you've been from those that make mistakes. And khata'a in Arabic actually is not a mistake. Khata'a, that's akhta'a really. That's ta'ammudan. Khata'a or khati'a is actually to make a mistake on purpose, to do something wrong on purpose. You keep doing these kinds of wrong things on purpose. You're the kind that does this. And min al khati'in, from those who make mistakes, is interesting because it's the masculine plural. So he's now gone beyond just you've made a mistake. No, you're from the kind of people that keep on making mistakes. So you go just apologize for this. You're always making some mistake or the other. That's just how you are. You're just that kind of person. And he's including men and women in that, again generalizing. So the blame doesn't fall specifically on her, and it doesn't become a serious problem for her. So with, you know, painting this kind of picture, what does it do? What is the guidance that we get from these couple of ayat, where he is supposed to be responding, and he first says, "Hadha min kaidikunna inna kaidakunna azim." First, in the study of Quran, one of the lessons that we have to draw from this is, When we are going to make a universal statement on behalf of the Quran, like somebody says, Quran says women's scheming is great and it's even greater than the devil. Hold on, there's a context here, and the context is completely different from what you're saying. Who's saying it? Who are they saying it to? When are they saying it? In what context is it being said? What's the audience at play? If you don't analyze that, can your conclusions be really problematic to the point where somebody's having some marital dispute and they say, this is just like Allah told us, "Hadh innahu min kaidikunna, inna kaidakunna azim." You women and your scheming is great. See, Allah said it. Man, shaitan would want your autograph. You know? So long as you're making your scheme, shaitan's on vacation. You make a job easy. People will use Allah's word to slap people, to abuse people. And if kaid is so terrible, well, if her kaid is so terrible because she tore his shirt, well, the surah began with the brothers of Yusuf, فَيَكِيدُوا لَكَ كَيْدًا, same word, They will make a scheme against you, and their scheme involved taking his shirt off and throwing him in a well. That was a pretty great scheme too. That's what got this whole thing started. So before we even get to her Qaid, there's already a Qaid before, right? So there, you know, to limit this or to try to use this to make sweeping statements about all women, I believe is incorrect. Or I'm not. If somebody wants to do that, Allahu Alam, they think they have compelling evidence. I just haven't seen it. I don't see it, especially not in light of this ayah. What we should do in this understanding the lessons from this story is really analyze every character and what role they're playing with the clues that Allah has given us, with the, you know, position that Allah has given us. His motivations for saying this are clearly political to me. There's no other way to look at them. You know, any other way of looking at them is, you could say there's an opinion that it's this way or this way, but if you put yourself in that position and you're in that hallway, you're among the servants, and you're seeing this happening, what, as you walk away, you're going to say, he's a really gracious person. No, you're going to say, he's a good politician. Wow, he's good. Look at how he squashed that entire thing. Man, if I found out that that happened in my family, there would have been a murder case. There would have been this or that. That's what people are talking in the kitchen. Those are the conversations that are happening. They're not saying, but you know, this shows that he is really quite generous with, you know, or he has made a wise statement about all women. No, he hasn't. That's just not the case, you know. So هذا من إنه من كيدي كنا. Certainly, it is from the kind of scheming you women do. إنَّ كَيْدَكُنَّ عَظِيمٌ. Your scheming is great. And by the way, that also means that this is not the only kind of scheme. There are lots of different kinds of schemes. So just like her scheme is about to get him in trouble, and it's pretty powerful. She's got friends who she calls friends, but they're not really her friends. They're going to start a scheme of their own. And by the way, up until now, her husband, we saw the word Sayyidaha, her leader, if you will, her husband. We saw Alladhi ishtarahu min Misra, the one who bought him from Egypt. That's the word that was used for him. And, you know, إِنَّهُ رَبِّي أَحْسَنَ مَثْوَايَ, if you want to interpret it that way, master, that's another word that's been used for him. But the actual word minister, Al-Aziz, hasn't been used yet. He hasn't been described as the minister yet. And the first time we're going to see the word minister is actually going to be tomorrow when we study the 30th ayah, when women use that word. Not the wife, not Yusuf, not Allah Azza wa Jalla, from him. His perspective, Allah will describe the women of the city talking and talking about the wife of the minister. And that's going to have a strategic role. Why is he being introduced as the minister at that point in the story? And what does that have to do? And what scheming are they going to do? And Allah will describe their words as a scheme too, actually. So there's, you know, we're learning, you know, some dimensions of psychology, some dimensions of, you know, family dynamics, things like jealousy, things like infidelity, things like emotional fulfillment, things like the scheming of the devil. We're also learning things like sociology, different levels of society, right? And how different levels of people operate. We're learning some things about politics. And these people, you know, people in politics, they may be powerful in some ways, right? They may have wealth, they may have influence, they may have the ability to make policy. They may have the ability to get somebody thrown in jail and throw away the key and never give them a trial. That's going to happen, right? So they can have these kinds of powers. But you know one place that's their weakness? Reputation. The weak link for them is if somebody finds out the truth of what I really am. That if somebody finds out what really goes on behind closed doors, then everything I've built is going to fall apart. You know, in election campaigns, when you're going after a certain candidate, you don't go after his policies. You don't go after what he stands for. What's the most effective way to go after a politician? Their personal life. A scandal involving them. Something, you know, some kind of character assassination. That's the way to go. That means they're done for good. You got them good. If you can question their integrity, well, then they have no business serving the public. That's just how politics works. And then other politicians, this is the fun part, other politicians, even if they know that the scandal is false, they can't touch him. Because they'll say, look, if they see me shaking your hand, they're going to say, I endorse all the things you're being accused of. So I need to keep away from you because you've just become toxic because of the press. You understand? So that's why a person's political career just comes to an end because of such a thing. A public career just comes to an end. And then people who even know the truth, inside this closed circle, do people know the truth? Yeah, they know the truth. But once Yusuf alayhi salam is going to get framed and thrown into jail, then nobody's going to go near him because going near him would mean political suicide. You understand? So there's larger games at play. Yeah, I like you, Yusuf, but I don't like you more than myself. I don't like you more than my politics or my career or the governor's mansion. I don't like you more than that. So that's where, you know, the line is going to get drawn. And we're going to see from the other side, because reputation is the sort of the weak link, that's where, you know, her friends are going to attack her to bring her down. Because, you know, in that upper circle, unlike, you know, when you have friends at school or you have friends, you get together and you have pizza or whatever. In that circle, people get together and they share parties and they dress up and they take pictures together, but they all hate each other. They all hate each other. They're like the vice president's wife is best friends with the president's wife, but hates the president and his wife because why couldn't my husband be the president? That's how they really are. So they can be chummy chummy at your face, but behind your back, they just want to tear you down because everybody's got one position above the other in some way, right? And they want it. So they'll pretend to be friends. They'll be, you know, they'll be the same social circle, but actually they are the most vicious kinds of enemies against each other. And any chance they get to tear the other down, they'll take, you know? And as I described this in the highest echelons of society, this satanic disease doesn't just exist in the highest levels of society. You could be working at a Walmart or a McDonald's or a shoe store or whatever, and your friends could be some of those people that just can't see you get a promotion. You became a manager? Yeah, because, you know, jealousy is not just about who's living in the palace. Jealousy could be you. Wait, you moved to a two-bedroom? I got to find some way of tearing. I feel inferior now. I need to find some way to tear you down. And that's what her friends are going to do. And by the way, I'm getting ahead of myself. We'll talk about this tomorrow, inshallah. If they are being invited to her house, right? They got invited to her house. You guys know the story already, at least the events of the story. If they're talking like that about her, and then they have no problem coming over to her house, what does that tell you? What kind of life do these people have? All their relationships are fake. Their social circle is fake. It's just built on mutual benefit. That's all it's built. They're not just politicians in profession, they're politicians in life. Like every relationship has some political purpose. If it serves my purpose, it's there. If it doesn't, it's not there. That's all it is. That's why it's not really a marriage. It's just a political marriage. It looks good for the PR campaign. That's why he's not up in arms about what she did. Because as much as I can, you're my wife, whatever, but you do what you do. Just don't get in my politics. Don't ruin my career. That's where the problem lies, you know? So this nuance, this very sophisticated view of politics and how things work in real life, you know, people, this is the last comment I'll share with you, people associate with religion that religion makes the world look simplistic. Religion is just about do good, you know, give charity and you'll go to heaven. And you know, religious people, religions generally have a very gullible, not real world kind of view of the world, right? So if someone's religious, they don't know how the streets work. They don't know how real life works because they're way too righteous and way too religious. What does the Quran do for people that come to this book? It opens their eyes to the darkest corners of society. It makes them street smart. It makes them spiritually intelligent in the most vile situations. It's incredible. We don't have this view that you have to shelter yourself and be in a spiritually, you know, magnificent environment where there is no Potiphar, there is no minister's wife, there is no brothers of Yusuf. Everybody's saying, Alhamdulillah, mashallah, inshallah, inna lillahi wa inna ilayhi raji'un. Everybody looks like this. They've got this on. The other day I had a tie on, so it's like some people are dressed like the kuffar. It's okay. Y'all can say it. It makes me happy when you say it. But anyway, the point is, we're not sheltered. The Quran is not creating a sheltered narrative. The Quran is giving us a very real life narrative. A very real life narrative. You can live a spiritual life, that doesn't mean you have to be gullible. Actually, Allah will show us how life really works and how to hold on to the principles of this deen, even in those dirty situations. Because you know what people say? Well, if everybody around you is dirty, you got to get your hands dirty to get by. Right? Because you got to play the game. Allah says, yeah, the games are being played, but Yusuf didn't play them, did he? All around him, games are being played, but he's not participating in them. But yes, those games will exist, and they will tempt you to want to play along. That's going to come too. If he just plays along, he won't go to jail. It's going to get to that point. And that's when Allah will see, are you really gullible? Because who's gullible? Gullible means you caved into the authorities that belong to human beings, and you denied the authority that belongs to Allah. Now you're gullible, because you don't understand how authority works. You got scared of A-Aziz, and you forgot about Al-Aziz Al-Hakim. How does that work? How does that work? May Allah Azza wa Jal open our eyes to reality around us. أَرِنَا الْحَقَّ حَقًّا وَارْزُقْنَا اتِّبَاعَهُ وَأَرِنَا الْبَاطِلَ بَاطِلًا وَارْزُقْنَا اجْتِنَابَهُ is a Prophet's dua, sallallahu alayhi wa sallam. Oh Allah, show us the truth as the truth and give us the will and the ability, the provision of following it. And show us lies as lies. And give us the will and the ability and provision to be able to get away from it. بارك الله لي ولكم في القرآن الحكيم ونفعني وإياكم بالآيات والذكر الحكيم والسلام عليكم ورحمة الله وبركاته.